Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Pie in the Sky Media. This series contains adult language and descriptions of graphic violence throughout. Listener discretion is advised.
3, 2, 1. Welcome back, Murder Chronicles Nation, to another bonus episode of your favorite true crime podcast, The Murder Chronicles. I'm Brandon. I produce the show alongside the great Carolyn Sorio. Hello, Carolyn. How are things in the Emerald City?
They're awesome. Busy weekend. Homecoming, soccer, craziness. Craziness.
Wow. Which, how old is your soccer player?
16.
Boy or girl?
Boy.
Boy. Is he playing on the high school team? Is he on a club team?
No, he's on a club team, but he also plays basketball, so we're going to transition into that. But it's so great to see your kids just kick ass.
Yeah.
You know, like, I really enjoy that.
My kids are volleyball players.
Mm-hmm.
And just in the past, like, month, they went from the local kind of shitty rec league, you know, to really kind of falling in love with the game. And so we signed them up for some clinics with the big club teams in town. And they liked it even more. And so it was about a month ago where they said, we want to try out. My one daughter's 13, my one daughter's 11. They wanted to try out for the club teams. And you could not make a club. Like, you could get cut. You know?
It's very, very competitive. It's
super, super competitive, you know? And they were all like, hey, this is going to be great. We're going to do this because, let's be honest, you know, things have been pretty easy for them up to this point in their lives, you know? Mm-hmm. They haven't really been tested on a lot of things, especially not physically or athletically, because they're still pretty young. So as their dad, I was really, really nervous. Really nervous. Because they're confident and, you know, reasonably athletic for their age. Bottom line is they both made their respective teams. And when the coach called, I was so nervous because it could have gone either way. Because the coaches were like, they were treating it as they should. They said, listen, not everybody's going to make it. People are going to get cut. Feelings are going to be hurt. Parents are going to be mad. Don't call me if your kid doesn't make the team. My job is to put the best team on the court to win tournaments, period. And that's it. And little kids aren't really.
I thought you were going to say that you were going to start crying.
No, little kids aren't accustomed to that type of adult kind of meritocracy kind of organization, right? If you're not good enough, you leave. Unfortunately, it's you know, the participation trophy generation that's going on right now.
Well, and I think that's why Coach Prime is having, you know, such a, people are so into it because it's like, totally back to old school, kind of like, you know, hey, I'm not going to give you a trophy. You got to show up. My husband and I were out for a drink and we were talking and I said, I feel like, you know, I'm the Coach Prime of the relationship where he's the one that's like, hey, anything you need. And of course he started laughing, thinking, oh, right. You're Coach Prime. Right. But what I meant, I wasn't acting like I was all grandiose about it. It was just that I there's a part of me that's like, yeah, I'm like a mama bear, but there's that other part of me that's like, you gotta earn it. You gotta earn it. And there's that dichotomy that I have, which can be kind of hardcore. So I like that. You know, I think that it's hard to see, but you know, your kids get, you know, my son was playing basketball with the high school and the level of competition was so intense. He was just sitting there like wide-eyed and I was just like, you know, he's not going to have a chance. And he sat on the bench the entire time, he'd get to play for like 20 seconds and then he was out.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's where you build that thing of like, yeah, you got to show up and you got to sit on the bench.
Yep. Yeah.
And that's what you have to do if you want it bad enough, you know, until you get better.
And you learn a lot from sports, and it's not always what you think you're going to learn. Okay. When I was my daughter's age, either sixth or seventh grade, so it was either one of the other ages, right in between their ages right now, I wanted to play basketball. I wanted to play on the junior high basketball team. Yeah. I had a basketball hoop in my front yard, my driveway, growing up, right? I could make free throws and shit. Like, I thought I was a badass. And it was laughable when I was out there trying out. And I didn't make the team, and it fucking stung. It stung a lot. Okay.
No, we're talking about it. Yeah. Yeah.
And but then what I realized is that I did not really excel at team sports.
Yeah, I hear you, brother.
Individual sports were better. And so I got into BMX bike riding, where I could do it at my own pace, and the only person I was competing against was myself. And I excelled at that, and I loved it, and I did that for the next 5 years, you know. And and so that's one of the things that you learn. You're a team player or you're not, you know. Mm-hmm. And
I mean, I think that's where you learn to be a team player. You learn, you know, how to. I wish that I would have played team sports growing up. I didn't. And I feel like I really, it's such a pleasure to see my kids doing it.
Yeah.
And I'm living vicariously through them. But like, I have to stop myself, because on my jogging route, I see the main coach. He jogs too.
Yeah.
And there's that part of me where it's like, you know, we're waving, we wave. And I have to, of course, I know how this works. I want to be like, hey, you know, Patrick. You know,
yeah, next and week it'll be like, hey, I want to smash him in the knee. Yeah, I know. I hear you.
I have to stop myself, because it's like, you got to let your kids do things themselves. You know, you can't. I mean, I know that that's maybe not the popular thing to say, that if you have an opportunity to give your kid to be like, hey, you know, my son, but he's got to earn it. And I just think that's really important. So I think sports have a place, and
see,
I'm enjoying watching.
I don't remember ever expecting my parents to come in and solve problems for me. Okay. Like,
because we're Gen X.
Right. But there was one time where my brother was a senior in high school when I was a freshman, where he and his friends published a really subversive underground newspaper in school. And, And the problem was that they did it on school grounds using the school's like Xerox machine, because they're fucking morons, right? And so they were
going to... How subversive could it be?
Oh, you don't know my brother and his friends. So they were going to get kicked out of school and not allowed to graduate, and really bad. And so my dad stepped in and hired an ACLU attorney and came in and saved the day. But up until then, like everybody else, it was expected. Parents were like, you did it. You fucked up. You fix it. That was it. You know, that's what we were expected to do that. Yeah. And until it got really serious, like, oh, you might not graduate and it'll fuck up college plans and stuff. Then my dad got involved. But and then there was another kid in my high school who I won't say his name, but he didn't get selected for the National Honor Society. Okay. Didn't get selected. And his parents freaked out and stepped in and tried to like fix it for him. And he got so much shit from everybody. Oh, mommy and daddy are going to come and try and save the blah, blah, blah. And they like sued the school and they lost and everything. And so
oh my God,
not only were parents not expected to come in and fix shit, but when they did, you got your balls broken for it, you know, because you couldn't like fight your own battle. Kind of, maybe it was a little too aggro. But now my kids are at the age where they're hearing that from authority figures. Okay. Like, we were touring a high school that my older daughter might want to go to. And they were talking about admissions requirements. And they said, we look for kids who solve their own problems, who don't expect mom or daddy to come in and call me if they get in trouble, or if things don't go their way. Deal with it. We're here to prepare you for life beyond. And I went, it's a little, as a dad, I'm like, gosh, are we there already? I remember when she was a toddler, you know what I mean? Like the passage of time, that kind of landed pretty hard. But also, you know,
you had to love the message, right?
Love the message. Right. I'm confident that my kids are going to be that way. You know, my kids will be fine. They're smart and they're confident and they're they'll be fine, but it's good to hear that she might be in an environment where that is required, you know, where that's the norm. It's not the exception, you know, which is nice.
Absolutely. Yeah. Because that's not how it is a lot of time, you know, you got to teach that, mm-hmm. you know,
yeah.
which means they have to experience what that feels like full circle.
Yep. Exactly. All right. Good talk. I don't even know where we got onto that, but let's talk
discipline and training.
Well, no, hold on. Speaking of, I didn't know where this was going for 75-80% of the episode. Okay. Because I don't know if that means I'm a misogynist. I don't know if it means that I trust women too much. I'm not sure what it is, but I went into this for the first 2/3 of the episode, Mark's the bad guy.
Yeah.
I don't know. You did it on purpose. Yeah. You got me. Good for you. Woohoo. Yeah. Take a victory lap. Now leave me alone. No. Okay. So, all right. So Mark Stover, Pacific Northwest mm-hmm. guy, had a bit of a bumpy path to success, you know, dropping out of high school. And then interesting path towards success with loving dogs, loving animals, which is, I think, super cool. I love animals.
Mm-hmm.
And we're in the dog business. My wife owns a dog grooming salon and doggy daycare in Hollywood. So, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Has for almost 20 years now. Yeah, it's great. So I can also really relate to your a beloved pet dying in your teens and that having an effect on you. I mean, who that happens to, if you're lucky. I know that sounds a weird way of putting it, but that was
I think that's not weird. I think it's true. If you can bond, if you're lucky to have it. I mean, one of my favorite books when I was a kid was Where the Red Fern Grows. I mean, it's
Jesus.
It's like a heartbreak. I know. I tried to read it to my kids. They're like, no, thanks.
Just stop. No, I mean, lucky in both ways, lucky to have a companion like that. And then lucky to have that lesson in death. You know, and losing someone that, you know, something that you, someone that you love. So he becomes this dog whisperer. Okay. Mm-hmm. And he, like in a big way, you mentioned Ichiro, one mm-hmm. of the greatest baseball players of all time, goes to this guy. So I trust him instantly. Mm-hmm. You know, and he's a witness in court and like, and all this stuff and great.
Yeah, because that's next level.
Yeah,
there's being really great, you know, family, man's best friend, training a great dog. And then when you're training like service animals, you're training police dogs. Like that's a whole nother level.
Yeah, it's life and death. Yeah. And I've mentioned before, I did a podcast with a Navy SEAL for a number of years. And we did a couple of episodes on the importance of their canine soldiers, basically, like going to battle with them. Like they parachute in places and shit. I mean, crazy. They also do some stuff that's a little like they file down the teeth and give them titanium fangs to really fuck people up. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Wow.
Can you imagine? Right.
Well, now I can.
Yeah,
Jesus.
Wow. It's crazy. All right. So he meets Linda. He meets Linda, an heiress.
Yes, yeah.
That's the problem right there.
Oh my gosh.
That's the problem. But I used to ski on K2 skis when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Mm-hmm. It's weird thinking of that just a family owned it. You know, you think it's some huge, you know, whatever corporation. Well,
these are really rich people.
Yeah.
So you can keep that mindset in there because they were very, very wealthy. They owned an island.
Yeah.
That you any kind of indication.
You could own an island for $10 in Puget. I mean, there's like 1,000 islands up
there. Oh my gosh.
Don't be impressed with owning an island in Washington State. Give me a break. It's not like the Bahamas.
What? I'm not even going to buy into your trap.
Well, you buy another, pine trees and fucking grizzly bears? Big deal. Mm-hmm. They start, but how great, if you're a dog, how great mm-hmm. is Canine Island Adventure Sound? You're fucking running trails, you got beachfront, you get mm-hmm. whatever treats you want. Oh, man.
I mean, it's like, I wish that we treated humans as well as some people treat dogs, right?
Oh my gosh. but then things go south in the marriage. So one thing you didn't really specify, there were no kids, correct?
There were no kids.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. So things go south.
Mm-hmm.
She wants a divorce.
Yep.
She owns the island.
Her parents or her family does, yeah.
Right. So Mark's got to leave. And now what I've glossed over first is how, no pun intended, Mark was like a dog with a bone for these wedding pictures. Like, what was it? Why do you have such a boner for these wedding pictures? Like, what was the thing? For a woman that leaved him and wanted a divorce, he needed the wedding photos?
I think that there's a lot that we will never know about this case. Yeah. We don't know how much. I think my opinion about it is that, he didn't want a divorce.
Yeah, of course.
The idea of throwing these wedding photos away was just so soul crushing for him because it was the memory, the day, a representation of their bond together or whatever. But but I think it was just a trigger for the fact that he just, was so upset,
Yeah.
I mean, that's my take on it. I don't think that when we get to the end of it, all that stuff about like him reaching out, he'd moved on, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I feel like that was all bullshit with the wedding photos, from Michael Oakes's perspective.
Well, we'll get to that because you threw a sentence in there that was weird, that the wedding photos were found in his house, that he had them.
Yeah. That's what the private detective or that private Mark, investigator.
The guy who wanted him so badly after his death, they found the pictures in his house.
They were there.
Like the whole time they were there?
I mean, that's what she said.
That's weird. Okay, but so anyway, so Mark has to move his business, which is very disruptive, mm-hmm. but he's able to power through it.
Well, and one other thing too. Yeah. I think that there was a lot of friction with the business. I think that there was a lot of...
You had to pay her $100,000, right?
And like she was, it sounds like she was trying to poach the clients by bad-mouthing him and not poach them, which is basically, that's a business where you need to have your shit together. You cannot be having all these personal, people don't want to deal with that, especially people who are celebrities who can do whatever they want, hire anybody they want.
Yeah, so, like, celebrity or no celebrity. Yeah, pets are family for people. Mm-hmm. You're spending this kind of money to send your dog to a fucking private island. Okay. You're going to want the dog to be taken care of. You're not going to want to hear anything bad about the person looking after your beloved family member. So if she's trying to kind of take his legs out business-wise, okay. That's an issue, but he seemed, like you said, he took his lumps, right? Like if he had a dark time.
Yeah.
He gets popped for it. He's got to get on parole. He's got to do his anger management. He's got to do all that shit. It sounds like he really got his shit together
mm-hmm.
and kind of moved mm-hmm. on with his life, which for a certain kind of narcissist or a certain kind of egotist, that might piss him off to see that someone you want to suffer, not suffering, right? It's like the reverse side of the best revenge is living well. He started doing okay and was surviving and thriving without her. And so ultimately, I think that's the lesson here is what drove her.
Yeah. I mean, it just doesn't, it's kind of a, I think that's what was interesting to me about the case is that both people had moved on, but had they really? I feel like he definitely had moved on, But she was still living in the past for whatever reason. Because why else would she want to destroy, allegedly destroy?
She's the one who filed for divorce. He begged her to stay. She said, no, I'm out of here. I'm leaving. So he leaves. The Alford plea comes up again. Great. Reminded me of what I learned, you know, last year, what an Alford plea is. So he meets someone new. Linda meets someone new. And then the next real kind of like big thing is he gets like doxxed, basically, right?
Yeah. in the real world. Like he, And if you listen to the 911 tape, it's like, it totally is like, the person's like whispering and like, I want to know. Like, it's so sketchy. And Michael Oakes' ex-wife, I don't know if she testified, she interviewed, she was in an interview and she said that when she heard that, it sounded to her like Michael Oakes.
Of course it was him.
I know, exactly. But I'm just saying, like, they wanted to, this guy, I mean, what that takes to mess with someone's life.
Well, we'll get to what I think it is, but the real hero here is the cops that did not arrest him on the drug charges. Like, all right, someone's fucking with you here. Okay. Mm-hmm. You had a van full of dogs, right? Like your nose has been cleaned for years now. Someone's fucking with you. Get out of here. Right. That was super cool.
But he still had to deal with that stress.
Of course, I was thinking about
how stressful that would be.
Yeah.
If somebody is like literally trying to bring you down.
Yeah.
And the law is involved, and you know, you never know which way that's going to go. You know, I mean, he could be completely innocent, and you know, you get a judge that doesn't like you, you get a prosecutor that's like, hey, you know, I don't think he's a dog whisperer. I think he needs to go down because it's an election year and you know, he shouldn't get any special favor, you know, whatever. Right. Like that would be so stressful.
Of course. You know,
and he was living that stress.
So what about the other side of it? So Oakes, now let's put ourselves in that situation, right? Linda, who's got this, who's just bitter and mad, and I wanted to ruin this guy's life, and his business is doing great, and he did this place now, and he's got employees, and fuck him. And so now she's got this new man in her life, right? And so what does she say to him to convince him to do murder on somebody, right?
She was like recording, collating, collecting everything. And this is where there's always that saying, two sides to every story. And that's why I set the story up like that.
Yeah.
Because when you get one side to a story, it can be very convincing that this guy is a complete abuser and he's like gone off the rails and he's a stalker and he can't let go. And so I think that she was very convincing. And I do think he did go off the deep end a little bit. I think that
That Mark did. Yeah, originally, right. And he got in trouble for it and he did what he needed to do and got his shit together. Yeah.
But I think that, you know, she spun it. You know, people can always spin. And
she
was a great spin doctor. And then once she was able to like romance, you know, throw that in there, that's really powerful.
That's where I think it is. I think it could be something like really primal, you know?
Where she's talking
to a new man saying shit like, how can you live with yourself that my ex is still out there driving around? Well, you know, how can you do, aren't you a man?
You know what? I don't even think it was like that. I think it was like totally sexualized and like, I just wish we could be together. And I just feel like this is hanging over my head. And
sure, it could like, be that. It could be.
She's doing this. It's like foreplay. No, she's like totally. Yeah. And I mean, as an evidence by the captured footage at 2:30 in the morning on her doorstep where, you know, he's like going out to battle and she's like, caressing him. Oh. And like.
So two things on that. It could be something like, you know, he hurt me years ago and was never punished for it. Okay. He terrorized me and got away with it. One of my favorite movies of all time, top five easiest, True Romance, 1992.
Oh, I love that movie. Of course.
When Clarence comes back after killing Drexel, okay, in Alabama, doesn't know if he's alive or not. And he's eating a burger and his face is all fucked up. And he just goes, I killed him. And she starts crying and he's like, he's not worth one of your tears. Do you wish it were me? Do you fight? And she goes, no, I think what you did was so romantic. Okay? Because he killed her pimp, right? And that was such a turn on for her. And it was romance because he put himself out there for her and, you know, and risked his life. And so, yeah, that's obviously a dramatized Quentin Tarantino version.
Well, no, I mean, not even really. Like the Jada Pinkett Smith, Will Smith sure. kind of thing.
Absolutely.
Where he just had a, you know, there was a reel that like, unfortunately got into my algorithm. And like, you know, she's just like, you know, I didn't go to that, to the Oscars with him as his wife, but I left, you know.
Oh, gosh.
As his wife. And I'm like, that's what that is.
Ugh,
that
such, that's so gross. Oh, my gosh. But, yeah, so there we are. So now.
She got him hook, line. Yeah,
hook, line, and sinker. So now he's out there doing all this really, really stupid shit.
Totally.
Stupid shit. It was absolutely. Self-defense. But I already had the body weights to dump him in my trunk. But it was self-defense.
I mean, it's like
how that would you thing say where... that and be want to be taken seriously?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I felt like they should have had a team of like creative writers coming up with something better than that defense of like these pictures and like. Bring these pictures at 7 a.m.
Right. But I mean, all of that, well, all I'm saying is that if I'm the judge, and this judge was great because the judge didn't believe a fucking word out of his mouth, but didn't mention that. Mm-hmm. We have you, before you show up at his house, go to a fucking Walmart, right? Mm-hmm. And buy the elements required to weigh a body down in water. Okay. Mm-hmm. Then you go to his house and now you say it's self-defense. Like that right there, it's, you're done, dude.
Well, I mean, in a Kevlar vest. I mean,
and if you kill someone in self-defense, what the judge said, why not call the police right afterwards and say, hey, something terrible happened. I'm not fleeing the scene. Here mm-hmm. we go. This is the, you know, that's what a law-abiding citizen does. You don't dump the gun. You don't buy it. Right. You don't buy a drop gun to begin with. Okay. Fucking get rid of it and get rid of the body in a fast moving fucking body of water. I mean, just, it was all, ugh.
You know who was the hero in this is
Amber.
Dingo.
Who?
Dingo.
Oh, the dog. You didn't tell me what happened. Did the dog die from the gunshot wounds?
No, I think she lived.
Shot yeah. three times in the face.
Three times going after.
Yeah, of course.
You know,
of course.
The absolutely man's best friend, you know.
So this guy, Oaks. It's just you couldn't leave a clearer trail of your dipshitness than what this guy did.
Okay. The chain.
You go to Lowe's and you rent bolt cutters and then bring them back on time so you don't go over the 4-hour rental charge. The fuck is this guy doing?
And why do you even have to like go into that Grange parking lot? You couldn't find some other place.
It looked like a Cold War. It looked, you know what reminded me of when you got the murder box? When you like, you had to go to that location and you like, you backed up your car. Remember you were telling me that story, right?
Yes. That's what it was.
Right. It's like some Cold War information exchange. We go trunk to trunk. Yeah. Don't fucking look at me. All right. Give me the thing. It was just the so
smoking man. Absolutely.
Yeah, it was just absolutely. So
and then he describes these women. Like I didn't include this, but like he described these women as like two biddies. That were like,
right.
You know, calling it, like calling
he was
it
moving
in on
a body. So he probably was moving a body. That's so, it's just so stupid. So often in these cases, police can rely on the stupidity of criminals, right, to make their job a little easier. but that's when I love that part of the episode when we just get a detailed accounting of his day. At 2:30 in the morning, he said goodbye to his fair damsel in distress and I'm off to slay the dragon kind of shit, right? And then...
You know, it's funny because if it was truly a romance, a true partnership, a true love, you would never want your partner to go do that for you.
No.
You know what I mean?
No.
You would never, ever, ever want that. You know? And It's just.
Listen, if it's a true romance type of situation where the woman that I just recently fell in love with is being lorded over by a violent pimp, okay, maybe I'll go do something. All right. But again, that's in a movie.
I'm saying she wouldn't want you to.
Right. That's in a movie. What? Alabama didn't ask him. Alabama told him, don't go over there. But Clarence had to.
Exactly.
Clarence had to. Because it exactly. was going to be, or there wouldn't have been a movie.
Right. But he, that's the thing. Right. He didn't need to because Mark had moved on.
Right.
He wasn't right. doing anything. He hadn't contacted her in almost 2 years because that was, he was at the end of the domestic violence protection order.
Right. So your thing is that, and I think I agree with you, that it was Linda manipulating Oakes to go and do all of this, that it wasn't Oakes's original idea. Like, I need to get rid of your ex because I can't live with that motherfucker still being around.
I mean, this is absolutely, you know, I mean, let me just say all the disclaimers. Nobody's been charged, nobody. But I mean, just, you know, my personal opinion.
Well, Oakes is doing time for this, right?
Yeah. He's the only one doing time.
Linda hasn't been implicated, yeah. right?
No, absolutely not. You know, he totally, I mean, we always look at the motivation.
Yeah.
Who benefits? Cui bono, right?
Right. right.
Michael Oakes, he didn't even know Mark Stover.
Right.
You know, why would he have a beef with him other than, you know.
Other than ego. Right.
Her ego.
Well, or his. I mean, look, there are some really toxic fucking dudes out there who carry this high school mentality where, you know, like, I need to fight my girlfriend's ex just to show that I'm a man. Right. I mean, sometimes that teenage testosterone just kind of embeds itself and that becomes part of your operating system, you know? Thankfully it's rare.
I mean, I think that 230 security cam footage says it all.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I mean, if you were going to do that, why wouldn't you do that while you're still sleeping? You know what I mean?
Yeah, sure. But at 2:30
in the morning, you go and you're like, okay, he's going somewhere. I mean,
but using the cui bono line of thinking, how does Linda benefit?
I mean, I don't know her. So it sounds like based on what the private investigator said, there's this thing of like having to win at all costs.
Right. That's what I wanted to get to. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And is that a function of growing up privileged? Is that a function of how you were raised? Was daddy like that? Was daddy like, you know, I have to crush my enemies, business or otherwise?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I know someone that's like this, and I never knew anyone like this before where they had their own reasons for things that didn't make sense to me at all. And they had to win in whatever way they wanted to win at all costs. To me, it was like, we're both losing, you know? So that was my first real taste of that. And there is, you know, me personally, this idea of like, somebody has an agenda, it doesn't make sense. And yet they have to win at it no matter what, even if they're hurting themselves, which clearly, you know, we don't know exactly what happened. You know, Michael absolutely was hurt by this. I mean, I don't feel bad for him because he, you know, basically is in prison for 26 years. He doesn't get to be with his family and his children. So, you know, I'm kind of talking in code a little bit, but
I know,
you know, I'm just.
Is Mark's widow, did she carry on with his dog business that you know of?
I don't know. I mean, they were engaged. I think that I don't know a lot about what happened. I mean, when you're the dog whisperer, you're the focal point. You know what I mean? Like he had the talent. He had and was amazing at it. And, you know, to get a very well-trained dog is such a, for your life, you know, to have a dog like that is so great.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's perfectly trained, that, you know, you got to do everything right. You know, it's a lifelong friend.
Yeah. Ah, wow. Whew. Well, nice job hiding the ball. Mm-hmm. Again, I thought, you know, I was waiting for Linda to turn up dead and Mark being the stalker. Like, that's what I was waiting for the whole time. So that was nice. It was nice. It's like you're walking down a familiar path in the woods and you end up somewhere different, which is cool. So great job. Really enjoyed it. Any plans for Halloween?
You know, we were planning on having a huge party and then we just got like crazy busy with just so many things. So we have plans, but not, and I'm actually kind of grateful that we didn't, because then I end up doing a lot of this stuff and I just don't have time for, you know what that is, the fixer. Yeah. Like,
Dr. Phil. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, that's kind of what my role is in these things. And I just was kind of like, again, waiting for the kids to engage, and they kind of never took liftoff. So they were talking about it, and I'm just like, you know what, until I see some action.
Yeah.
So what about you guys?
Ugh. Yes. It's our 14th annual pumpkin carving extravaganza. It started when, you know, before we had kids and we were just in this little apartment and our friends were in the building. We all got together in the courtyard and there were like five of us and we carved pumpkins. The next year there were like 10 of us. And then we started having kids and then we moved into a house and then, you know, there were like 20 people. And then the kids started having friends and it was like 50 people. Now there's like 130 people coming to my house. You know, and it's terrible for me. And my wife doesn't understand. I love seeing the kids interact. But now it's just a bunch of stupid boys running around, right? Because my girls are that age and the parents don't give a shit. And they're just sitting over there drinking and their kids are being assholes, you know, and I got to run around. And, oh, you need a carving utensil. Great. Oh, here's this, or the bathroom's this way, or here's where the food is. Oh, we need more ice. Like, that's me. I'm a fucking cruise director. Okay. Mm-hmm. I don't get to enjoy it at all. And to prove to my wife last year, I wore my Apple Watch during the party. How many steps? Okay. Party started at 3 o'clock and went till 8 o'clock, 5 hours.
I'm going to say
I didn't leave my property.
17,000.
Have we talked about this? How did you hit 17,000? No,
because I am you, but the female version.
It was 17,340 steps.
We have not talked about it, but because I know. That's why I'm so happy that I'm not to be in charge of that.
I couldn't believe it. And I'm all sore the next day. And then I do all the cleanup.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
But the kids love it. My wife loves it. It's tradition. It's a bunch of bullshit.
But you know what? It's so worth it. I mean, at the end of the day,
yeah, making memories.
I just don't want to do it if I can't do it the way that I want to do it, because then I'm anxious. Yeah. You know what I mean? If I don't get to clean the way I want to clean and have everything set up the way that I want and it's half-assed, that just freaks me out. And yep. I can't do it, you know? So I was giving myself a gift by saying next year.
I'm not complaining, but I'm complaining a little bit. So anyway,
good luck, soldier. Good luck.
That's what I will be doing. At least it's not a costume party, which is great. And then, you know, trick or treating. The girls still like trick or treating. So.
Oh yeah. My kids still trick or treat.
So
yeah.
But we'll do. So, all right, well, let's wrap this up. Thank you for joining us, Nation. Please consider supporting the great companies that support our show. Head on over to Apple and please, you could write a review. You can rate us, share with your friends. It helps more than you know. Carolyn, anything you'd like to add?
Nope. I'm Carolyn Osorio with Brandon Morgan, and we will see you next week.
Thanks, everybody. Stay safe.
The Murder Chronicles is a pie in the sky production recorded live in the beautiful Pacific Northwest. We are produced by Brandon Morgan and myself, music by Soundstripe. For Pie in the Sky Media, I'm Carolyn Osorio, your writer and host. Thanks for listening.
Hello, the world. We are They Will Kill, a true crime podcast. I'm Courtney Eck.
And I'm Sadie Eck. And we are sisters that want to tell you about lesser known murders.
Our cases are always compelling, maybe even a little scary, with just enough banter to keep it interesting.
You can find us at theywillkill.com
or anywhere you listen to podcasts. See you there.
See ya.